You're organizing the sled walk for more than 10 years now in Jerusalem, and now we think the 7th of October has changed a lot in Israel, is what we heard from people who are living there. And I don't know if you want to answer this question. It's maybe a question for you as a group or to describe the work of your group, but also, of course, for you personally, only if you want to answer. How did you experience October 7th?
Okay, so yeah, it changed everything in Israel, I think, and we felt it as a group and as individuals. I think it met each one of us in a different place. I don't know if my personal experience is the most representative. I've been in Jerusalem in October 7th, which was relatively safe. We were in bomb shelters because there were bombing all across the country. And I think most of us were mostly terrified for our friends and families who were in the south of Israel next to the Gaza border where the massacre happened. And I think that this feeling, this horror got stronger by the day after October 7th when the information became clearer, and a lot of it also related to the sexual violence that was discovered in the following days and months later. And I think as a group, we found it to be something that we felt like we had to talk about, especially when we saw the silence regarding the subject in the world.
And you actually published also something about this silence you mentioned in an Instagram post in November. You called for feminists all over the world to take a stand on sexualized violence against women and queers that the Hamas committed on the October 7th and afterwards. And now the question to you, why did you decide to write the open letter on Instagram, or why do you feel that it was necessary to write an open letter like this?
I think that we've been protesting in Israel for more than 10 years now. We always felt a part of a bigger community. Like we are doing our protests here, we're focusing on matters relevant to this country and to this society, but we always felt part of a bigger movement. And I think it was a hard experience for us as activists too, to find out that once something like this happened, the gaps between us were enough to. I think we worried about the silence and also about the feeling that there was some kind of like justification for using this sexual violence as a weapon, as a legitimate tool of war. And we felt like the basic values we all stand for suddenly came to a very horrifying test. And honestly, we felt alone, and we also felt like inside our country we had to sound a different voice than the one that was in the public media. I think like this unique situation brought the sexual violence to the front of the stage in a way it never have been before. And we felt like outside there was silence and inside there were very unprofessional voices dealing with that matter.
Can you explain what you mean with unprofessional voices?
I think that the way like journalists came to the subject was in a very insensitive way, in a way that keeps using the victims and survivors as a tool in this war, which was the problem in the first place. I think it was outside of Israel and inside of Israel, and I think it was part of the entire atmosphere around it. Like the silence was also a part of something bigger than that. It represented the way that the victims and survivors were not seen as human.
Now you described that you felt left alone as feminist activists. How do you explain the silence from feminists after the massacre of October 7th? And maybe what do you think about the question who stands in solidarity with whom and why?
I think that's a good question, and I can speculate and say like my opinion, but I wish I had like the opportunity to talk to more activists and to hear more voices. I feel like in my experience and perception, I think that we know too well the phenomenon of not believing the victims, of trying to make sense out of violence that is usually far too horrible to comprehend. And I think that in many ways, it could be a very human thing to not want to believe these kind of stories. And I believe that in this matter, like in any other matter which we meet, the fact that people do not believe the survivors a lot of the time, it may have came from these reasons too. And also I think that as feminists, we also belong and relate to many other groups in our lives, whether it's ethnic, national, religious, political. And I think that in this case, the bigger picture was so complicated that maybe people felt like they related more to other parts of their identity than to this part, than to the part that would help them relate and see and understand what happened to women and queers on that day, and also men. I want to believe it comes from places like that, from complicated places, from the distance, and not from not believing in the actual values I believe that we all believe in. I think that's a barrier we should learn together as a global community to go through. And I can tell you that a month ago, I think, there was a message that the UN wrote about some witnesses in Gaza that said that Israeli soldiers attacked or harassed women in Gaza. And we also wrote in our social about that, that we believe everyone, that we believe Palestinian women and Jewish women and Israeli women. And I think that in Israel, it got accepted with criticism because it was seen as something that we should not do during the war. But I think that just like we demanded the world and feminists across the world to stand next to us when we needed it, we felt like there was no other option. There was nothing different with it when the allegations switched sides.
You already mentioned also sexualized violence in armed conflicts is a weapon of war, and extreme sexualized violence was a systematically planned part of the Hamas attack. And nevertheless, not only feminist groups, but also important international women's associations like from the UN took quite a long time to condemn the attack or still remain silent. You published also the letter about it. And we were wondering, maybe you can say something about what does that mean for those affected, for the survivors and their families, the silence.
It broke the trust. It broke the feeling that there is someone to rely on, that there is mutual grounds to stand on, that we will be perceived as human and as civilians, no matter what conflict surrounds us. And the UN Women issued their statement only after a long protest in Israel about it, that the Israeli Rape Crisis Center led, including a demonstration in front of their offices in Israel. And even then, the statement was not firm in its words. And I think that it in Israel, you know, the translation of slut walk, the word that we use for the word slut, is a word that means both slut in Israel, but also abandoned. And we use this double meaning to demonstrate the feeling that we are left alone in front of the government and of the whole patriarchal system. And I think that this happened here in the harshest way from the people that were expected most to be the ones who would always stand by survivors and families in these kind of situations.
You published the open letter in November. Now it's March. How have you perceived the time since you published the letter, and has anything changed in the meantime in terms of global feminist solidarity?
I think that many Israeli feminist groups I have done a lot of advocacy work and also a lot of investigation work inside of Israel for us to have more clear information that we could show the world without hurting survivors along the way, like I said before. And I believe that this made some change, also the protest and the social media campaigns about this. I can tell that us specifically got some replies on the letter, actually I think only from Germany, which is interesting. I still believe that it got caught up in the entire war. Even after a few months, and even though we're in March and it was in November, I don't think it got the gratitude it should have. It was still justified along the way. It was still left aside. And I think that's also social constructs that we unfortunately know when it comes to sexual violence. And it happened here in the most extreme way of it.
You already mentioned the UN report about the IDF and the violence against women in Gaza, and that you made a statement about that. Maybe you can tell us a bit more about this question. How would you like to see feminist global solidarity, or what could it look like?
I think that what was becoming more and more clear to us during this time is that the worst thing that the patriarchy does to us is dehumanize us, is use us as tools, whether if it's a war situation when women and queers were representative to the nation, and so hurting them was an act of hurting the entire country, and that way it became a tactic. And whether it's on our day-to-day life by objectifying, sexualizing, and all of those familiar ways. And I believe that the most important and the first thing that we should do is always make sure that we perceive each other as human, even though there may be differences and gaps. And once we do that, I believe that we can communicate everything, and we can go through even the hardest times knowing that we hold the same values and the same resistance. And I think that this solidarity is something that we hold together even from far away. I mean, I can tell from my experience in Israel, and I'm sure it's relevant to many other places in the world, we usually feel like we fight a battle against the system, and it can be lonely. And there's something about knowing that we are part of a bigger movement, and we have sisters all across the world that's fighting for the same thing, that could make us stronger and make us more effective and be a start and an opportunity for the change we're making to be bigger and more deep and important. And I think that's the goal.
This is a very important statement. And at the end of the interview, maybe you can say, what are your plans for the near future, or what else is important for you to say?
And maybe also, what are your plans for the 8th of March?
So, for the near future, this year, you said earlier, completely true, that October 7th changed a lot in Israel and the entire war that's still going on. And the first question we found ourselves debating was whether to do the flat walk this year, because many things like froze. And I think the population is all grieving, and it's hard to look forward and to imagine like the usual events going through. And the first decision we made was to make the slut walk this year, because we believe it's more important than ever to stand for this message and to demand rehabilitation and everything the survivors need, because so many new women and queers and men became part of this circle this year, and also so many other of us were triggered during this war and had to deal with a lot. And we feel like the slut walk is also an opportunity to demand a political demand that we have, and also to have like a very healing march together, that we reclaim the public space to be a place that we can feel safe in. And that's why we decided to do this year, even though it was hard. And that's actually the topic that we are focusing on this year, the importance of this in this time. And on the 8th of March, we'll be like doing the campaign for the slut walk this year. And we'll be having photo shoots and like this get together that will help us to get through with this year's organization.